Senator Liu, because Aaron Rial, NBC News senator, has talked about this story that hospitals, I just want to get your reaction to this, in general in the country, they want to start charging surgery patients ahead of time for the surgery because they're tired of chasing the patients and insurance companies for their payment. But you know what's funny? They don't even tell you when you get a surgery how much it's going to cost. How are you going to pay for it up front? And families can't even afford rent right now with inflation. I just saw that article. I'm, oh, really? Someone has to get their appendix out. You can't tell how much it's going to cost, and you won't take their appendix out? Good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Jack. And, you know, Jack, it's interesting because we now go to the dentist, and you pay up front with, at the dentist. Your dental insurance doesn't cover it. We had a little experience, and I had a root canal done and had to pay about $1,300 up front to have it done. So this is happening. I think the insurance companies should get a little slap on the wrist because they don't pay on time. They string out the payments. You know, that they do deals so they don't pay 100%. But you're right. How can you pay for it when you don't know what the cost is going to be? And it's amazing to me what's happening in our country. What's happening? Where's the sensibility that we once had? I just can't believe what's happening. And it's like a roller coaster, Jack. It's running through the society. We've got the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I think the president has stepped up to the plate and said, "Listen, we got to put an end to this. Got to get it over and settle it." And I get a lot of pressure on society itself, and I feel so badly. Think of all these uninsured people. Like we're going through uncompensated care here in the state because we've got to redo our deal that we had for the last 7 years with the hospitals. A lot of things going on, Jack, and a lot of crazy stuff, but hopefully good minds will solve these problems. But you're right, a lot of pressure on the individual.
I don't know about you, but you've seen a thing or two more than me, but I reached a point now, and J-Doc and I talk about it. I never used to be like, it wasn't a huge difference to me between Fridays and Mondays, but when I get Friday now, after all the stuff I have to talk about all week, and when I'm trying to make sense of it, I'm so excited I can turn things off for a few days because everything is so crazy. And a number of years ago, I didn't feel that way.
I think you're right. You're exactly right. I can't wait for Friday. It gives me a chance to rest and recharge.
But you know what it is, Senator. You can spend time with, how do I say this? You know, when you're in Concord as a state senator, and you've been, you know, we talked about it last week with Jeb Bradley, but you're the true, you epitomize what a true public servant is. You know, you're not doing it for the money. You work long hours. You're up there, whether it's trying to put a budget to bed or pass something and represent your constituents. And frankly, I say this, and I'll say it to Jeb Bradley, a few people have ever done it better. I mean, you've done it longer and better, and you do it for the true sense of the word. My point is, though, you know, it's hard for you to get away from politics because people will see you, and they're going to ask you, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about Biden? What do you think about Trump? And it's just nice when you get to the weekend and you can talk to your prettier, smarter, better half. By the way, happy pre-Mother's Day to Mrs. D. But you can talk with your kids and friends about things that, no offense, kind of matter without the stress.
Right. Boy, you got it, Jack. You said it perfectly. This is one tough business. And it's just one tough business. Your family has got to be with you. And it's amazing. And to all of our listeners, happy, happy Mother's Day. Nobody deserves more credit than the mothers for the great work that they do. And Jack, you know, I'm sure your wife raising your kids and putting up with you, that's not easy.
No.
My wife putting up with me is not easy.
Hey, are you having the kids? Are you having the Superman, your grandson there? What are you doing?
Yeah, we're going to get together and have lunch together.
Oh, good.
So, yes.
How's the boss doing, by the way?
Oh, everything is good. Thank God.
I'm talking Mrs. D. I'm talking Mrs. D. The boss. Is she's well?
Yes, the real boss. The real boss. Well, you know, Jack. Every 2 years, it's Lou. What are you going to do? What's next? You know, and there's where the pressure begins. But she's fine. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Hey, let me ask you this, only because it's Friday, and I love to reflect. Sometimes, you touched upon the environment today, because we've seen the national issues come right to the state house and legislative issues right here in Concord. abortion rights,
yep.
immigration,
yep.
border, gender, and I could go on and on and on. And I remember the days when you were there, and I was a youngster, as they say, at WMUR. I'd go to the State House, and there's Junie Blaisdell from Keene in with you and Ralph Huff, a Republican, and maybe Ed DuPont.
Right.
And you were all just like having lunch in one of the offices talking about the budget, and you weren't throwing food at each other. You weren't throwing names at each other.
Right.
You know, and I know the Senate still comes together better than most states here, but you've seen a lot, Senator D'Alessandro. How are things different today, even locally, between Republican and Democrat? If you had to say a couple things, what are the most noticeable differences?
Well, you're exactly dramatically different. Those days of having lunch together don't exist anymore. 14 to 10 votes in the Senate are customary on key issues. Partisan votes. We don't have the camaraderie that we used to have. There's some of it, but not like it used to be. And then I look at the House, and that's in total disarray. So I must say to you that I started in this business 50 years ago. I was elected 50 years
ago.
Can
you believe that? Wow.
I know it. As a young man, I went up there not knowing anything about anything and had great leadership from Kibitzakis.
Yeah.
From Manchester, a great lawyer from Sheehan Fitzpatrick.
He was
the deputy speaker. Yeah. But those days are gone, Jack, and we got to recoup, we got to regenerate, we got to make things better.
And just look at what, because you're smarter, prettier, better half will ask you, Lou, what are you doing in 2 years? But look at this year. Jeb Bradley stepping down, Governor Sununu not running again, Ann Custer retiring. So pretty interesting stuff.
Yes, very interesting.
All right.
Jack.
I think every day should be Mother's Day. You have a good one. Happy. I'll let you do your patented goodbye.
Thank you, Jack. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Have a great, great, great American day. And please keep the dream alive and well. And happy Mother's Day to everyone. Every mother deserves it. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you. Kevin Landergan, New Hampshire Union Leader, senior political reporter, joining us. Kevin, I tend to ask you a question. I'm not going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you what you're covering, what you're writing about. What do you think's interesting right now?
Hey, Jack, great to be with you. Interesting debate in the House yesterday, and it's on the topic you've just been talking about, which is a legal definition of anti-Semitism. This is in a number of states have adopted this, over 30 states have adopted this definition of what is anti-Semitism for the purposes of a hate crime. So in other words, it's not, as you know, First Amendment, you can protest, you can scream, you can yell. What this tries to address is, what if you commit a crime while you're doing that? You know, and if you do, it is a hate crime under state law, which you also know usually means enhanced criminal penalties if you're convicted of a hate crime, right? So, it was a real interesting debate because both parties were really split about it. It passed by about 30 votes, but a majority of Republicans were against it. A majority of Democrats were for it.
Yeah.
The arguments being against it essentially being, you know, we don't define racism. We don't define sexism, Islamophobia, you know, sort of like obscenity, right? We know it when we see it. And we don't single out a religious faith in our statutes like this proposal does. And that was the pushback to the idea, but it's through the House on the way to the Senate. It should be a real interesting debate there. And it's obviously, you know, Terry Roy, who's the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee Chairman from Deerfield, brought this forward because of what's going on college campuses all over the country.
Yeah. Crazy, huh? I mean, crazy. Yeah.
That we have to do that. Yeah. I mean, that,
yeah.
As Lou was talking about earlier, it's a sign of the times. It truly is that.
But it's just
really even have to have this kind of debate.
It is like the 60s for different reasons. Hey, Kevin, switching gears, that second congressional district among Democrats is growing. And we had Lucas Meyer, one of my regular contributors, top Democrat strategist in it yesterday. He basically agreed when I said Colin Van Ostern can't be too happy that a third viable Democrat has jumped into that primary.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, and she's got Maggie Goodlander's got quite the resume for sure. What's interesting to me is, and I'm sure you noticed, Annie Custer, who's supporting Colin Van Ostern, former campaign manager for this seat, came out pretty hard against Goodlander's candidacy. Essentially, said we don't want to support someone who's got so much out-of-state special interest support, which was pretty sharp elbow for the beginning of the candidacy. But I think it speaks to, you know, what we've talked about on this program, and Lucas talks knows much better than both of us, which is this primary is not the whole game, but it's really important in a district that's elected Democrats over and over and over again. So this is a Republican's got a shot in November, but this is the race. This primary is where it's going to get, I think, pretty physical, you know, because you've got some talented people and ambitious people, and they all want it. And what's interesting to me about Goodlander's candidacy, too, is the Clintons, right? Is meaning Maggie Goodlander has a relationship, as does her husband, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor. He worked for Hillary Clinton, you know. The Clintons were at their wedding, mm-hmm. Which I think doesn't get more personal than that, right? So do they get involved here? And the assumption is the Clintons are going to help her raise money, which we both know is a big deal, right? If the Clintons are helping you raise money. Mm-hmm. So, Colin's got a chance full because there's a third candidate, Becky Whittley, you know, assistant Democratic leader in the Senate, really articulate. Again, passionate on issues and works with Republicans at the State House. So a force to be reckoned with, too. So it's a fascinating race.
Well, it's like the Democrats in the primary, the main ones for governor, Cindy Warmington, mm-hmm. executive counsel, and Joyce Craig, former Manchester mayor. I can't really tell who has the upper hand. One gets an endorsement one day, one gets an endorsement another day, and these endorsements don't matter, but it's the game they play. They raise money. But of that now, second congressional district, Democrats, who do you think, if you had to say, Kevin, you've covered so many of these races, now there's three viable, pretty well-known, pretty funded, as you connected Democrats. We don't see this all the time. It used to be they'd kind of rally around one nominee in a race. Who do you think has an upper hand among those three? Who do you think has the upper hand?
You know, if I'd had to say, I think you'd give a slight edge to Colin Van Ostern for sure. And why? Because, one, he's run statewide, and he's a statewide nominee was some years ago. But he also represented in the executive council a good part of this congressional district, right? So he's familiar, and that's why you're seeing right out of the gate hundreds of activists supporting Van Ostern. And it's all because, it's not because, you know, Colin Van Ostern's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's because he's been involved politically. He's represented a lot of those towns. He's helped a lot of folks in those communities, and they're coming out to support him. So I'd give him the edge, but it's by no means a done deal. And as you know, having covered a lot of these races and followed them, what's always interesting to me is that when you get a multi-candidate field primary, crazy things can happen, if you know what I mean. Which is, you know, it's I'm running against you, Jack. It's very linear, you know. You're making your pitch, I'm making my pitch, but you get three states in, they can affect one another in different ways. You know what I mean?
Yep. Interesting.
Hello?
Yep, I'm here. You there, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No. So you just, you never,
no.
You never know. For example, with two prominent, I mean, the first reaction a lot of activists had to me was with two prominent, articulate women running that mm-hmm. may, again, help Van Ostern more than running against one articulate woman, if you follow what I'm mm-hmm. saying. Mm-hmm. But you've also got both Whitley and Van Ostern kind of conquered characters, right? They're both from this part of the state. Goodlander's history is in Nashua, which is you know, a real population center. So do Whitley and Van Ostern sort of bump heads for that base? You know what I mean? And that kind of helps Goodlander. So we'll see.
Real quick, before I go, just a minute, a Republican primary governor's race. Kelly Ayotte, Chuck Morris, the best known two there, former Senate president, former U.S. senator. You know, one may be raising more money than the other, but is it, you know, with the Trump factor here, and he did so well in the primary, and obviously Chuck Morris has tried to go after that more directly. Do you have a sense, is there an interesting dynamic? I mean, how do you assess that race in 30 seconds between Ayotte and Morris?
Yeah, I think it's Ayotte's to lose. I do. That's a former U.S. senator, and so I would give it the edge. But he's working very hard, and I think attracting, frankly, more activist support than I thought he would by this point. So if I'm Ayotte, I'm keeping my eye closely on him. I think it is a competitive race. I think a lot of people dismiss it, but it is a competitive race. It's just, I think, hers to lose.
All right. Kevin Landergan, New Hampshire Union Leader, political senior reporter. Thank you. Make it a good weekend, Kevin.
Happy Mother's Day.
Teresa on our show this Friday morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Where are you joining us from?
I am from Long Island. I'm home right now, and I actually start my summer tour up in New Hampshire, so I am super excited.
Well, awesome. Sorry about the Islanders, by the way, on the hockey side, but that, you know, good team this year. Hey, listen.
Listen, the Rangers are hanging in there.
I know. Hanging in there. They're doing great.
I know. We're Ranger fans, so.
Yeah. Well, Bruins tonight, game three back in Boston against the Panthers. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, the tour. You know, you've been a dynamo. I love this stuff, by the way, because I've written a few novels about modern paranormal twist of the Salem witch trials. So I'm a fan of kind of like those who can connect. But you have a great story. Why don't we go back a little bit? Tell us about you, who you are, and how it all came to be.
Sure. So I consider myself just Teresa Caputo from Hicksville. I feel that I was born this way. Growing up, I always would say to my parents, "I don't feel right. I don't feel like I don't feel like I belong. I feel different than everyone else." And no one ever in my family ever made a big deal about the things that I would say or do. And then it wasn't until later in my 20s that I realized not only was I able to connect with my own departed loved ones, but everyone else's. And I struggled with my gift for many years because I couldn't understand why God would bless me with this gift and who's going to want to come and see a medium. And then 9/11 happened. Uh-huh. And I had a spiritual experience where I was shown that people, after the loss of a loved one, they carry burdens and guilt, negative emotions that do not give them the ability to heal. So I put my gift in God's hands and I said, look, if this is my soul's journey, open the doors and I will walk through them with my gift, but to help people to heal. And here I am over 20 years later with, you know, I had a TV show for 10 years, been touring for over 10 years. I have a new series on Lifetime called Teresa Caputo Raising Spirits and Beyond the Readings every Thursday night on Lifetime, and still touring the country, delivering messages of faith, hope, and peace.
You know, and Teresa mentioned she's from Hicksville, J-Dog. She really is New York. She wasn't saying, like, Hicksville, like, you know, in northern Maine or something. But, Teresa, I want to go back a little bit because I love this subject. And I've often said with friends, family members, when someone loses someone, and it happened to me at a young age with my dad, who was a young Marine, I was 12. I always felt over time that when we lose someone, and I would love your take, it hurts because physically they may not be there, but let them be there spiritually, because I've learned over the years you should not assume they're gone. Let them live with you. Let them live around you. And there are many times that you can't explain it. You have a feeling someone's in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, I've even seen, you know, something moving. You know, I believe in that. That if you really have someone who's important to you, and you've crossed the spheres of life, a parent, a loved one, a kid, a brother, a sister, a best friend, let them be in your dreams. Let them be in your life. Maybe you could address that.
Yeah, I always say to people, I don't, this isn't about believing in me. I know that each and every one of us have the ability to connect with our own departed loved ones. That is a soul that can never and will never be broken. Mm-hmm. Embrace what you see. You know what you see around you. You know what you feel. If you see something, let's just say you see a red cardinal. and it reminds you of someone that has died. Mm-hmm. Take that as a sign from their soul that they're reminding you that they are living life through your eyes, and they're encouraging you to live life with as much happiness and joy as right. you possibly can.
And I've felt over the, and I've read about this, there are people that believe like a hawk, a beautiful hawk, if they fly near you or close to you, it's almost like a spirit trying to tell you something. Teresa Caputo, the Long Island Medium, I want to talk about your show, the Who, What, When, Where. Of course, you're coming up to New Hampshire, but we're also into other states up here. My question is, I learned, I met someone a while ago in Newcastle, New Hampshire. I only met the woman once. It was actually, ironically, you're gonna get a chuckle at this, Teresa. It was Mother's Day. And we're in this, we're right down on the water. We're going to have a little lunch on this dock. And my kids, my girls were there, and we're having Mother's Day. And this woman walked by with her friend. We're moving into this place. And she said, you know, I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm kind of connected with the past. And her friend looked at her, and she was well-dressed. She was wearing, like, a vest, and it was a little chilly. It was like just like a spider vest you'd wear skiing and, well-dressed. And she said, I'm connected. And she goes, you're not here by accident. I just want to tell you that. I feel a lot of family stuff. And one thing she said about one of my daughters, she said, you know, she's connected, meaning, do you believe, Teresa, that some people can connect with those who are gone and have sort of a direct path, and they can sort of vice versa? And then other people, they even if people around them, they actually don't have that connection. Is it unique, like, to you? You said growing up you felt something. Is that true?
Yes, I believe, especially young children, they're very connected to the souls of the departed. They sense and feel things because their mind isn't burdened with busyness, right? Kids really, truly say the darndest things. Like I said, I believe we all have that connection with our own loved ones. Some people have the ability to connect with everyone's loved ones. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we grow out of it as we get older. Sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So
I see it with my granddaughter. My granddaughter is 2, and she mm-hmm. makes reference and talks about people that she has never met.
That's
and
awesome.
And people that she has met that have just recently passed, and telling us that they're sitting right there on the couch.
Awesome.
So, you know, I take those as also signs and validations to believe. You know, I always say to people, believe in an afterlife. Don't let the pain and the sorrow and the grief destroy your faith or your belief in yourself.
Right.
You know, live your life with as much happiness and joy. You know that your loved ones are encouraging you to do that.
Right. I love it. Teresa Caputo, before we let you go, do you believe in, like, can you talk to someone even not in person and sense things?
Can I? Yeah. Like, and also for people, and I don't know why I'm saying this, when people say to me, you know, tell my dad I miss him, tell my dad I love him, or yep. tell my mom yep. that I love her, I always say to them, you just did.
Yeah.
Because they hear you, and that's what I have spirit validate, like with the messages. They'll communicate with their personality. They'll talk about things that you haven't shared with anyone else here in the physical world, validating that they are truly still with us.
I love it. And, of course, the books I'd written about the Salem witch trials in the modern day, I love the connection and generations. Before I let you go, because I want you to talk about your shows, of course, J-Dog on the board as well. And I don't care if it's good, bad, or indifferent. And I'm just curious because I love this stuff. Do you sense anything about me as we do this interview? Just anything at all? Anything come to your mind or not? I'm not putting you on the spot.
I honestly was not connected, but I did feel because I feel the way people have died, and I felt like a blow or something to the chest, and I'm having a lot of difficulty breathing. So I don't know who passed from you from the chest, but that's all I got. And the other thing that, because it's just things that the souls bring me through.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And once I open that up, especially when I'm doing interviews, it can be open to whoever is in the room with you, in a studio, or whoever else is connecting the call. So that's really hard for me because they do bring me through the departures.
Well,
the thing that I also...
I'm only asking because I respect it, and I know you've had a great talent. I love your passion, by the way. You just have a great personality. I always remember that years ago when you kind of became known as the Long Island medium, Teresa Caputo, that you were. Yeah, I just love the personality you brought to it. Just a genuine passion for your gift, if you will, and connection. You know, there's a great, I don't know if you've been up to Salem, Mass, but there's a great woman who I got to know. She's actually considered, because Salem, of course, home of the Salem witch trials, but back in the late 1600s. But Laurie Bruno is kind of the modern-day priestess. And if you sit with Laurie long enough, just a few minutes, give her a little bit of time, and she's at Pickering Wharf in Salem, and I've sent people to meet with her. And I'm not afraid of this stuff at all. Even if they say, you know, this, I don't like what I, but she's amazing what she, and it's not like you, your aunt had a cat once that would sleep in the afternoon. No, no. She would say stuff that only you knew, you know?
That's right.
So that's
right.
Why I asked you. Yeah.
That's what I said. That's what I try to do. Listen, there are only so many different ways that people can die, and there might be common burdens and guilt that someone might carry connected to someone's death. Mm-hmm. So that's the incredible thing when you come to the experience. You're watching someone's life change in front of you. You're mm-hmm. watching their departed loved ones talk about things that happened years ago, things that happened after they died. They channel with their personality. They will describe what happened the moment the soul left the physical body. What you did was if you had the opportunity to sit with their physical body after they died. And to be in a space and to feel and watch someone heal in front of you right. is something truly amazing.
I love it. So I gave you a few more minutes. You said you felt something. Anything else or just that one feeling?
No, that's it. I know I got to move on to the next interview.
Okay, listen, real quick. You're coming to the Capital Center for the Arts?
Yes.
Tell us
I will be there on June 1st and 2nd.
Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joins us, talking about hospitals now wanting, in some cases, to charge patients who are getting surgery in advance to pay for it, saying they're tired of chasing the patient for the money. Erin, I was talking about this earlier. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. We just had the Long Island Medium on, so I'm trying to react to what she said about me. So I'm still processing. I'm okay.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you're a little in shock. Wait. Did you ask her about AI?
No.
That's a new form of communication.
That's right, about how you can speak to your loved ones who've passed. No, I just asked her. She was getting, after 10 minutes of the interview, anything about me. And she goes, well, I just had like a sudden hit to my chest after talking to you. I go, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Oh, boy.
Listen, I have to ask you. I spoke in the first hour when I read the show brief that you were talking about today, reporting on. You know what's amazing to me?
What?
And then we had a gentleman call in after I mentioned this, that you were coming on, that he went to the dentist from Durham, New Hampshire, went to the dentist for a procedure, and it was $5,000. So you know the thing about hospitals is, good luck if you're getting a rotator cuff surgery or your appendix out. If you ask them ahead of time, how much is this going to cost me? They can't tell you that. Because it's not transparent. And then you get, I shared the story of someone I know close to me had to get an appendix out, kind of an emergency surgery. No complications, same day, went home, textbook surgery, $67,000 all in. So how the heck are they going to, they don't even know the cost. How is this going to work?
Yeah, I mean, that's gross, and I'm sorry. It happens all the time. It happens all the time. It's yet another tile in the mosaic that is our broken healthcare system. And I think it's a lot of hubris that we as Americans are like, we have the best healthcare in the world. Let's be clear. We have the best doctors in the world. We don't have the best healthcare. There's a difference. Because when you have people that need basic medical services like knee replacements, CT scans, even births, these are just some of the procedures that hospitals and surgery centers want you to cough up the funds for ahead of time. Now, legally, under federal law, hospitals have to take people in an emergency. I would argue that birth can often be an emergency situation, but the point I'm trying to make here is that it doesn't have to be. And unless you can pay ahead of time, and like you said, good luck, and hope you have a lot of free time to be on the phone with your insurance company to figure out how much it is, but if they can actually tell you a price, then they're going to want it ahead of time in many circumstances. This is genuinely laughable, given that half of all adults here in the U.S. say they can't afford to spend more than $500 on medical care, let alone $60,000 for something real. And then beyond that, the argument is like, oh, but it's elective. As a mother, this one really, really bugs me, because there are procedures that children need often that, while, you know, they can say like, oh, this thing to help your child breathe better is elective, sure, but it makes their life and quality of life way better. So who are you to say it's elected? These type of things are just so wrong. And the idea that insurance companies are in this position to have so much power to jack up the prices so much, and then you can, you know, figuring out what is this person maybe owe based on their insurance, it seems criminal. And I think it's a lot of hubris that us as Americans could be like, we have the best healthcare. We don't. That's categorically incorrect.
Maybe the best, as you said, doctors and nurses. Yeah, thank you, Erin Rial. Frustrating. Thank you, Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Maria Prue, she's the CEO, president and CEO of Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, New Hampshire. Maria, of course, been on the show before, helped us out in our 3-hour town hall at the Capital Center for the Arts Bank in New Hampshire stage on mental health awareness, depression, anxiety, suicide as one of our great partners that day. And this is the month. And you know, Maria, first of all, good morning. Happy Friday. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jack. Good morning.
How are you on this Friday?
I'm good.
First of all, I hope you're well, and thanks for supporting us in the past. And really, you're the folks in the state on greater awareness. You know, it's interesting as this mental health, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you have an event coming up. But Maria Prue, I want to ask you this. Healthcare, such a big part of our lives, right? If you don't have your health, it's hard to have wealth or anything else. And yet the biggest things, our stakeholders and as a nation, all this other stuff, we don't talk about the biggest, more than anything else, is mental health and dealing with it in a better, more innovative way. It affects more families. And look at how many young kids are dealing with high levels of anxiety and depression, like number one health issue for young people. It's not this or that. And as you age, it might be a knee or a shoulder or a replacement. But when, you know, mental health, if you're not above the neck feeling better, it's pretty tough to physically feel well. So you've done a lot in this regard, trying to get it sooner. Employers are looking for more benefits for this. So talk about that first and the need as we get into this month of May.
Sure. Thanks, Jack. You know, and I agree with everything you said. You know, we've always been so focused on physical health. And we all seem to understand that when you diagnose chronic conditions like cancer at an early stage, you have a better chance of being treated and living a longer life. But unfortunately, we haven't brought mental health into those same discussions for a long time. And I think what we all realize now and wish we would have realized sooner is that if we treat mental health like primary care, like we do with every other physical health condition, that we can treat it sooner. And by treating it sooner, you know, we are able to get ahead of issues, whether it's in kids, in adults, and then allow us as humans to live a healthier life. You know, as you said, mental health issues impact your physical health. We often see comorbidities with people diagnosed with mental health. We see about 70% right now of our primary care claims coming through the door having a corresponding diagnosis of a mental health condition. That's a very high percentage.
Why did it take us so long to start looking at mental health as primary care? Why the disconnect? I mean, I'm serious because I don't understand it. If you're not of sound, healthy mind, now we all have stress and you're going to have moments and people get down and more people are probably depressed than not. It's hard these days not to be some level of this. But if you're not feeling well and you're not well emotionally, it's really hard to be good physically. Why did it take so long? Why the disconnect?
You know, I think I wish I had that answer, Jack. I can only surmise based on all the work we've done that there's always been this stigma about mental health, and people don't want to talk about it. It's hard to talk about. We all know that. And so people sort of kept, I think, their issues to themselves for far too long. I know the pandemic was bad, but maybe one of the things the pandemic did for all of us is root that out. And allow people to talk about it more openly and more freely because we recognized what was happening with the youth, being home, not being able to be in school with their friends. And we saw a significant increase in mental health conditions during the pandemic.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that is a bit of the silver lining that we're now talking about it. And we're having this conversation today and many more conversations.
Well, I like what you're doing, trying to get to this earlier for coverage and treatment. And I also want you to touch upon how you're trying to, if someone can't go to the doctor or an expert, you try and get it coming to you. But, you know, I don't want to talk about the time with, you know, during the, even the pandemic term bothers me. But anyway, the point is, young people, yes, really, we did a number on them. And it wasn't so much the virus as the policies, the remote stuff. I mean, I'm still talking to students and parents today. They've had such a... And look at how sad it is, Marie. I don't want to get you involved in this at all on the political side. But all this cancellation of commencements because of the chaos right now and the protest, a lot of these students didn't get normalcy a couple years ago. So it's the whole college experience, and it's only going to heighten anxiety and depression. But I want you to touch upon a little bit of what you're trying to do here to get things earlier into the process, because I know employers are looking for it. There's a greater recognition. And yes, hopefully now we can start realizing that mental health, and I listed as anxiety, depression, mental health, and suicide, number one health threats to young people. So what are you doing here? Because you've done a lot already.
Yeah, sure. You know, so we're doing really a few things. You know, first and foremost, expanding access. And then second, reducing barriers to that access. So, you know, we have been very successful in bringing new providers into the state that can work with our New Hampshire members. But what we need to do is get people in to see those providers. So the second and more important part of that is, how do you reduce the barrier to that access? And the way that we do that is in two very significant ways. Number one, we increase the modalities in which this care is offered. So not everybody has the time to drive to a mental health provider for an hour visit a week or every 2 weeks. And so expanding the modalities really means making that care available both in our members' home, if that's what they need, doing it through telehealth, if they want to do virtual visits, as well as continuing those in-office visits. So by increasing the modality, you make it easier for people to access care. The second and really important piece is around cost, right? There's been a significant cost barrier because through traditional health plans, we've attached a specialist copay to those mental health visits. And so this ties right back to what we talked about at the beginning with treating these visits as primary care visits. And so what we did in New Hampshire on January 1st of this year was we reduced all of our copays for mental health visits down to the primary care level. And so now our members are seeing less out-of-pocket cost, which again helps to reduce the barrier to that access.
How are you doing on recruitment of more professionals to treat this? I know you've worked with some. We've had, trying to think, the principals out of the firm in Mass who are awesome. But how are you doing on recruiting people into the mental health field and profession and services?
We're doing a great job. You know, there's a lot of providers out there. I think you're referring to InStride Health that works with just children, and they are amazing. And we brought them into network. So now they're available to all of our members. We've also brought a provider, Aspire 365, that works with children as well as adults. And they cover treatment for anxiety disorder, depression, but also they do a lot in the substance use space. So they're great. And then, you know, we're going to be bringing in a couple new providers over the next few months that we'll be excited to announce once we get the work done with them. So we really had a lot of success in this space. There's a lot of desire to serve, and it's just about getting the work done and making those providers available to our members.
Awesome. And, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you as well, well, first of all, I don't want to gloss over May 24th. You have an event come up. Please tell us about it.
We do. We are very excited to partner with the Fisher Cats. We're going to be sponsoring a mental health awareness night at the Friday, May 24th game. And we're also excited because that's actually a fireworks game. So for folks who come, they get to watch a great ball game as well as experience fireworks after that game. We're going to be there, as I said, in partnership with the Fisher Cats, and we're going to be doing a ton of work while we're there, providing helpful mental health facts and community resources. So we're going to be sharing a lot of information with fans. We're going to have a table set up that talks about all the great providers that we've brought into network and how to access that care. And we're actually going to have a few of those providers present at the game that can talk to fans who are interested. And so we're asking everybody to wear green. Green, I didn't actually know this. Oh, it's one of my favorite colors. Mental health, the color of the month is green. And so we're really encouraging everybody to green out at the Fisher Cat Stadium at the May 24th Friday night game.
Well, Maria Pru, President and CEO of Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, New Hampshire, I applaud you because, and I like your passion in talking about not just what we need to do, but actually getting some of these done. Because it does take a collective view on this, and I don't know why the disconnect for so long. But I will say this, Pete, I'll let you have the final thought on this. I don't know if you'd agree with me or not, but if we put 100 people in a survey audience of all ages, all stages in life, in a room, and I loosely had this, and you and I are sitting up there as the moderators, and I said, how many people have suffered a serious heart episode in your life and or loved one? Some hands will go up. How many people have had to have some surgery, for example, like a damaged joint or something, and some hands will go up? You know, how many people might have, fortunately, overcome a cancer diagnosis, and a number of hands may go up? How many people suffered to some degree of mental health, and I define that anxiety, depression, or mental illness, or even worse, in your family? Could be a nephew, could be a niece, could be you, could be a spouse, could be a child. I bet you 70% of the hands, if they were honest, would go up. Do you agree or not with me?
I, I do. And Jack, I think by saying that, what you're acknowledging and what we all want to see is more people being willing to actually raise their hand, right? Mm-hmm. Reduce that right. stigma, acknowledge that this is an issue.
Yeah, well, I just think it's honesty, yes, but I am very concerned about some younger folks, and I define that as kind of under 30, 35, you know, the future, maybe under even 30, in my own sphere of friends and family. And I hear these stories about, you know, could be a nephew, could be a niece, could be a friend's grandkid, could be a buddy's kids. And I'm like, wow. And it's really hard because none of these are slam dunk, snap answers like take, you know, go and get this and you're okay. It's like it's long. The road is long. It's a tough process. And what I've noticed, Maria, it affects the whole family. It's just not. You know, like when someone, I'm just going to be honest, because, you know, as a parent, if someone gets sick, if someone gets the flu, you know, the typical protocol, stay at home, rest for a couple days, maybe stay away from some folks in the house, hydrate, you know, take care of yourself, and hopefully you start to get better. But if someone you love is suffering from mental health issues and depressed and maybe even, God forbid, you know, trying to self-medicate with stuff, there's no escaping that in the household, you know, and even if the person doesn't live there and they live 3 hours away, there's no, the worry doesn't shut off, correct?
Correct. And you hit the nail on the head with that, I think. And that's where the providers that we're bringing into the market that are new to the market, they yeah. recognize that with children. And so providers yeah. like InStride, they don't just provide care to the child that needs the mental health care. They actually wrap services around the entire family. So they meet with the child's parents. They meet with the siblings of the child. And they provide the parents and the siblings with strategies for how to help cope with the child that may be suffering from the mental health illness. And of course, families need to be receptive to that. But I think we all need strategies, right? When we encounter something in life that we've never dealt with before.
You need a game plan.
Exactly. Yeah. You need a game plan because you don't want to make it worse for your child. You want to make it better. And so being willing to engage in the therapy with your child is key to success.
All right. Maria, going to let you go. Maria Prue. Now, can people go to your main site and resources, information, question and answer? What's the best way to follow up?
Absolutely. We would love everybody to visit us at anthem.com where they can learn more about all the great things we talked about today.
Maria, have a great weekend. Thank you for coming to the studio.
You too. Enjoy the Seacoast.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. I finally figured it out, Rory. That's what's going on in college campuses with these protesters. It's a geomagnetic storm. It's going to cause chaos to mobile phone networks, GPS, satellites, and power grids. That's what's going on. Rory, I just had some commentary. I want to get your read on this.
Sure.
We have really terrible high inflation still. Affordable housing crisis, just to name a few things. We're told this week Social Security is going to run out of money. That's great news, right? I'm kidding. Chaos on campuses. And yet all The View, host of The View, the show, and CNN want to talk. I've been watching both on the monitor this morning. All of it, 24/7, Stormy Daniels, Trump hush money trial. Now, I know it's sensational. I get it. You're going to talk about it and update us, I think. But I really ask this question. How many people really give a damn? How many people really give a damn about this trial? I'm just asking the question.
No, yeah, very few. And it's not going to change your opinion of Donald Trump, I don't think, no matter what you hear in this case from whatever witness. And, I think it's a complete overreaction. Look, there is the historic element of a former president facing criminal charges in a trial. I get it. And it's all spiced up by the fact that, you know, characters like Stormy Daniels are involved in the storyline. But end of the day, you know, no one's going to say, you know what? I was wrong about Donald Trump. I'm going to vote for Joe Biden at this point.
Then the next question, Rory, and I'm being serious, what is CNN and some of these folks going to do when the trial's over without Trump in a Manhattan courtroom, whether it's for his businesses or what? What are we going to do, Rory?
I know. We need a trial, something juicy. And I said the Olympics, but, you know, these networks can't air the Olympics. That's all an NBC thing. So they're just going to have to tap dance for the summer and find something to fill the gap.
You know, it's funny, Rory, and I'll give my commentary constantly on my show, but I identified as that. I don't really pontificate as much as people like Rob Carson after me or Hannity in the afternoon on Trump and Biden or who's going to win. But I'm looking at this now, and we're not that far away. I'm actually thinking, and I'm not going to break it down, and this is not it's not really an overtly partisan line. And even Governor Sununu, who's not a Trump person by nature here in New Hampshire, said it Wednesday on my show. I'm beginning to look at the metrics in other than abortion rights, which is now a state issue, and health care, I think this thing is stacking up. When people had said, oh, Trump will win the primaries, but he won't win a general, I think it's stacking up more adversely for Biden on these big issues, border, economy, all these things we're talking about, wars in the world, cost of everything. I think it's shaping up more adversely for Biden than Trump at this point.
Well, certainly worse for Kristi Noem. But you, I also wonder, look, this past month, you haven't had a whole lot of commentary from former President Trump. I don't know if maybe just shut up and roll with it is maybe a new campaign strategy.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. People formed an opinion already, you know. But
right. So this it's a turnout game in November. And it's apathy is the biggest candidate on the ballot. And it's going to be, you know, what's it going to take to get you off the couch to actually vote?
That is a very good point, because it does matter who votes. But I'm looking at that ABC poll this week, not CNN. Inflation, economy, how people feel financially, the border, law and order. I'm just going through the list here. And I'm like, and they all trust Trump more than Biden. They may not like him at all, but they trust him to fix it. I wonder if that's going to be a theme as we go into that. All right. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Senate President Jeb Bradley on a Friday. And I'm just venting a little bit on it's good to, these days with the news of the week. It's good when it's Friday. And I don't know what people are going to do at CNN or The View when Trump's not on trial for a hush money case in New York in a few weeks. I don't know what they're going to do, Senator.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just non-disclosure agreements are not a crime. And, you know, how they've sort of bootstrapped what the U.S. Department of Justice decided not to, you know, bring charges against Trump, how Alvin Bragg has done this, past the statute of limitations is beyond me. So we'll see what happens. But
wait a minute, Senator, you didn't know that if Trump's not...
The longer this goes on, the more sympathy for Trump increases.
You know, Senator, you didn't know that in New York, that the only person to put on trial at a civil or a criminal in Manhattan is Donald Trump. There's no bank robbers. There's no organized crime. There's no Bernie Madoff. It's just put Trump on. I mean, you know, what else are they going to do in Manhattan?
I mean, again, and the more they do this and they single out Donald Trump, the more the sympathy for him increases. I mean, look, that doesn't the behavior of the former president may have been unsavory, but it's by no means illegal. Non-disclosure agreements are not illegal.
You're being way too commonsensical on this. My only point was, I don't think most people give a damn who are busy trying to make a living today. I don't think most people they already have an opinion of Donald Trump.
What people care about is the invasion across the southern border. They care about the fact that the groceries and gas and energy prices and everything else have gone through the roof. Yep. They care about the fact that, you know, their streets are not safe. They're worried about, you know, all sorts of things happening in terms of their kids at school, public safety. You know, I mean, we were just at the northern border yesterday, you know, a group of senators, myself included, and saw how, you know, illegal aliens are just able to walk across a small stream and get picked up on this very remote road and gone. They're gone. And, you know, the people that live up there have seen the impact of the drugs that have been smuggled in, and there was just somebody who was convicted, you know, and meanwhile you have groups saying, oh, this isn't a problem. Sorry, it is a problem.
Mm.
And I think, to get to your point, Jack, that is what people care about.
Well, anyway, we'll see where it goes. What else is catching your eye on this Friday? I know it's Mother's Day weekend. Any interesting stuff in the legislature?
You know, we're going to have number of debates next week. Obviously, front and center will be marijuana. You know where I stand on it. I think it's a bad idea to legalize it. And I say that as somebody that worked for an agreement on decriminalization, but I think there's just too many health impacts to legalize it. You invite the cartels and the black market in here. I don't want big tobacco, big marijuana running the state house. So I'm going to continue to advocate against it. I may be pushing the ball up the hill, but I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, my sense is Governor Sununu is not really in favor of the current legislation. He'd be out talking about it. We're going to let you go early. We had a great conversation with you last week. Enjoy Mother's Day weekend. Beautiful weather today anyway. State Senate President Jeb Bradley, thank you.
And happy Mother's Day to everybody listening, Jack.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Delta Dental Radio on the weekends, author of many books now, but also stories on the starting line. With some good news on what looks to be, Tom, going into Mother's Day, a better-looking day weather-wise than I thought. Good morning, Tom.
It's going to be awesome, and I love when you get charged up. And congratulations on being voted the best radio show in the universe. Awesome. I was kind of disappointed that Northeast Delta Dental Radio wasn't in the lineup. But, you know, heck, you gave me my start, remember? You did. And for my veterans friends, call me at 223-1300. If you're in oral health pain, I've been getting about 5 calls a week, and Dr. Correa and I have been handling it. So the good news, I know you got Steve on the other line. Tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, we have a trail race at the Canterbury Shaker Village. Starts at 10 a.m. All funds raised go to the Shaker Village, making sure that we continue to cultivate that hidden gem, which is 25 minutes from Concord, but very few people go to it for some reason. So we have a trail race out there to get people acquainted with all the great stuff out there. And I know you know this, but that the Shakers were way ahead of the time. They actually had the first dental chair in New Hampshire was at Shaker Village. And then Sunday, a kind of a moving race. We're going to do a special Mother's Day race at 9 o'clock at 2 Delta, and that raises funds for Hope on Haven Hill. So all the moms that are there and or have gone there, and these are moms that have had various challenges in their life. We're raising funds, and many of them participate, you know, with their children. So it's one of the most moving days of the year for me, because I get to see moms who are recovering, and we give out roses to all the moms and grandmothers, as well as syrup. And then, you know, even though I'm a jock, Jack, on Monday was the New Hampshire Business Committee for the Arts, and Delta Dental was among the few winners that were there. We got the Boundless Generosity Award, awesome. Jack, because it was so funny, it took me by surprise, but they listed off all of the arts organizations mm-hmm. that we contribute to, and it was just about everybody in the state. And so my staff always laughs at me because I can't say no, but you are someone that are equally committed, and I'm looking forward to
Wednesday.
Seeing you on Wednesday, and we'll take it from there for Veterans Council. So thanks for all you do, and have a great Mom's Day. And I know you always say you're better half, so hopefully you'll be surprising her with something.
Hey, hold on. Before I let you go, I know you got meetings. Real quick, Jake Dogg told us, but he didn't give me a – what's your feeling, Bruins-Panthers tonight? They each got a big win. It's even, but what do you think? Do the Bruins, do they fall behind here, or do they pick it up?
I think they fall behind. I'm just not confident. I hope I'm totally wrong. I was devastated by the 6-1 loss. I was devastated by the Celtics loss last night. They gave up in the second half. But then I'm thinking, like, they don't really care about how we're doing at Delta.
Yeah. I know. No, it's just fun. It's just fun to watch, especially playoffs.
Yeah, and we're blessed in Boston, for the most part, particularly this century, all of our teams have been competitive. By the way, in this weekend show, I have Mike Reed, who will be talking about volunteerism, and that's
awesome.
Something people hopefully will listen to. All right.
Always good stuff. Thank you, Tom.
All right, Jack. Take care.